Welcome to the Mycelium Network Podcast, a podcast for early stage web developers and the mentors, teachers, and communities that help them along the way. Hi there, Precious, and welcome to the Mycelium Network Podcast. So you were another one of the folks from the Chaos community who put up their hands when I asked for some junior entry-level folks who want to come and speak on a podcast. So first of all, thank you for that. Thank you for volunteering. I know it's not always easy to do. Sometimes it can be pretty stressful. But I want you to just chill out, take it easy, and this is just meant to be a conversation. So before we get into any specifics, why don't you take a moment and tell us more about you? How did you get to where you are? What is it that you do? And why did you find the Chaos community?
Hello. Hi, Scott. Hi, everyone. Listen to this. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Precious Adibuti. I am a technical writer on the DEI, an open source advocate. DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. How did I get here? I got into open source through LTG, 3 months internship, and that was also the beginning of my technical writing journey, because I worked on one of the tools in the Chaos community. And so since then, I just kind of stuck with it and kept on contributing to open source, writing articles, and just being in the technical writing space. And so far, it's been really amazing. I found Chaos through LGG again, because once you get into the LGG internship, you get like to find projects that you could contribute to, and Chaos was one of them. When I got selected as an intern, I got selected in the Chaos community, and so I've just been there ever since. So yeah, that's the story of how I got here.
So your primary focus is being a technical writer, and so that involves a wide variety of things. That involves documentation, but it also involves guides and that kind of thing. Also writing tutorials, I believe. And I think for a lot of people, they might hear that term and they might not be exactly sure what is a technical writer, what does a technical writer do? So for people who are unsure about what that means, but might be actually interested, this might actually be a great fit for them. Could you demystify the term for us a little bit? What is a technical writer? If you think of it in the sense of a day in the life of a technical writer, What are the common things that you would do as a technical writer?
So demystifying technical writing, I like to see technical writing as the bridge between a product and the user, whether the user is a developer or a non-technical person, non-technical in the quotes that you are not like very acquainted with technology and you just want to use a tool or a software or an interesting piece of technology, right? And you have to read like a manual or something like that. And so technical writers are the ones who translate the beauty or the usefulness of a tool to whoever is supposed to use it, right? And you tell the story of a product, you tell people how to use a product, because if you have a really cool product and it's not properly communicated to other people how they can make use of that product, it's the essence has kind of like been lost, right? So technical writers are the ones who tell stories about products. They're the bridge between products and users, and you are responsible for how people interpret the purpose of something that is built, right? Whether it's a software or a hardware, really. And so you write things like tutorials, manuals. Sometimes you have to actually create video content. So basically your work is to communicate the essence of a product or a tool to whoever is going to be using it, right? And so like the day in the life of a technical writer would mostly involve you learning from the creator of a product. Sometimes the creator of that product could be you. You could be the one to build your software really. And I think it's a really good practice for engineers or developers to know how to write, And so in cases where it's you, or you have to really want to translate what you've built so other people can use it. And in cases where it's not you, then it means you gather information from subject matter experts, that's what they're called, SMEs, and then you translate what you've gotten into readable and understandable content in a way that people from like various demographics or understanding levels, like experience levels, can make use of it without experiencing too much bottlenecks or drawbacks by using your product, right? So you are responsible for making sure that when you communicate things to people, it's at the simplest form, right? Like, if you can make it simpler for people to understand, you should, right? And obviously, it's something that when you're done, it helps the user's life, right? It's made their life a little bit easier. If you put out content that is not useful, that's not proper technical writing. The aim of a technical writer is to bring out stuff that people find useful. It's to satisfy the user's needs. So the day in the life of a technical writer is mostly you gathering information and then transferring that information into something that is comprehensible for the user, right? So that's me demystifying like what a technical writer is in like the simplest form possible. So you gather information, you translate this information, and then you periodically go back to the information that you've created to make sure that it is still up to date and it's still relevant to the users, right? Which is why you keep having like cases where you update documentation, you update an article, you update a release note, right? Because like the tools that are being built probably have to also still go through version upgrades, and so as they are upgraded and like updated, you also have to update the document that have been built to help users make use of them.
I know that one of the ways that you got into open source and you got into the space is through a program called Outreachy. I know about the program. Mozilla, a company that I worked at for quite a long time, was quite involved with the Outreachy program. But for those who do not know about this program, can you please tell us more about Outreachy? How did you get involved with it? And what did you learn through being part of the Outreachy program?
So Outreachy is a 3-month internship. It focuses on underrepresented and mostly people who are discriminated in various parts of their communities. And it tries to give them access to opportunities that the ordinary will not have gotten, probably in their local communities, right? Gives them exposure to the real world for a period of 3 months in the open source community. And it's such an amazing program because the alumni network is, like, it has like a bunch of people from the alumni network that have benefited so much from it, and they can attribute a lot of their growth and their successes to how much impact the program had in their lives, right? And I got into Outreachy in 2022. A friend of mine was applying, and so we applied together. So I got into the program, which is very interesting because at some point I almost did not continue with my application. Right, but I am actually really thankful that I did, and I passed all the stages and became an intern. So yeah, that was actually a very like pivotal moment for me in my journey because it was what officially launched me into the open source space, helped me know what open source is, the opportunities that are bound, gave me access to a lot of network, and practically set me up on a large part of the path that I am currently in right now. What did I learn by being a part of Outreachy? I got access to a huge network of communities. I joined the Chaos community. I learned about DEI, without chaos, it probably would have taken a longer time for me to learn what DEI was. I knew about representation in technology because I kind of had some first-hand experience with it, but I didn't understand how much further and how deeper DEI goes, right? And it's just really, really amazing how much work the chaos community puts into creating metrics that factor in different realities and how they help other people who are willing to learn about these metrics become a part of the DEI community and learn how they can apply these things to in their various organizations. And it's been such an interesting experience for me, and I am like so grateful to it. So yeah, I want to choose a very amazing program, and if you can and you fit the requirements, I think you should explore it. They have 2 cohorts per year, and you can check out their website at eldridge.org for more information.
I always look at people's LinkedIn bios, and the one-liner that they put on their bio, I kind of call it people's tagline. And yours mentioned technical writing. That's how I know that that's a focus area for you. But then it also says open source and DEI evangelist. Now, I am curious about the DEI parts. Can you please tell us more about DEI and why do you feel it is important in general and in open source?
A tagline on LinkedIn is such an interesting word. I like it. I'm going to keep it to my dictionary of words. What is DEI? I mentioned it earlier. DEI means diversity, equity, and inclusion. It has a variety of definitions, but a personal definition for me is meeting people where they are, right? And like factoring in different realities, and figuring out how people from various demographics can exist together in respect, right? And it's such an interesting perspective to life because then it helps you see things from not just your side, but also from the other person's side. And it makes it easier for us to like navigate like spaces, communities, and learn how to live like in mutual respect. So why do I feel DEI is important? On a generic level, it's important because, one, there are cases where people might not be able to have, like I said, it means meeting people where they are, right? And even though I know that there are times where there's like a whole opera and saying, oh, yeah, giving these people opportunities because of this, because of that, I want to have access to those opportunities too. The interesting fact about life is there are people who, unless something comes to them, they might not be able to know that these things exist, right? And so, for instance, cases like Altuchi, I probably would might have had access to open source probably later in life. Interestingly, before LTT, I had done something in open source, but I did not know that what I was doing was open source. And then when I signed up for LTT through the application fees and I started to know more about it, I figured out, oh, I've done something in open source before. So LTT kind of like gave me a bigger understanding of what open source was and launched me into a world where I could go more in depth into the field, right? And I've also kind of predict the future or predict the past or predict what a different part would have looked like. But it's very interesting for me to know that without having access to that opportunity, it probably would have taken longer for me to know more about the space, or I probably wouldn't even know about it at all. So the thing about DEI is sometimes giving people access to opportunities and bringing it to where they are is probably going to be the only way that they'll be able to access it, right? And I think it's very important because it has this whole thing about privilege blinding us, and you might not see it from your own perspective, but DEI is what helps give access to people who ordinarily might not have been able to get them. Like I said, and I keep saying, it's meeting people where they are. And so generally for me, I think DEI is important because it's important that we factor in other people that have like different realities from us, and also it also helps build mutual respect and gives you access to different perspectives to life, but also untapped opportunities, right? So you may have, there are certain people you invest in right now and you see how much their growth is in, and then you realize that if they did not have access to these opportunities, they probably wouldn't have been able to grow into these huge assets that they've become right now. And then like in open source is like ideally about communities, right? And so and then like open source thrives on communities, and so DEI in open source helps us build sustainable and healthy communities where people feel valued, they feel like they belong, and you can like have sustained contributions that keep the community and the project going for a long period of time, because people know that in this community I feel safe here and included, my opinions are valid, I belong here. And so you have a community where people feel secure, in quotes. And ideally, everybody wants to see the community or the project grow into something that is really amazing, because happy contributors, happy projects. So yeah, I think DEI is important in general and even in open source, because valuing the other person and meeting people where they are is an important aspect of life that we should inculcate and keep advocating for as we go on. I try to be an advocate of that as much as I can to the very best of my knowledge.
So a lot of the things that makes DEI important in general and then applicable in open source has to do with the health of open source and the health of an open source project. Now, you were part of a talk that was given in June of 2023 about Augur, which is a software package that's maintained by the Chaos community, and then about open source project health. Sean Goggins, who's the maintainer of Augur, joined you on that talk, as well as George from Baturgia. They do a project called Grimoire Lab, but that's also part of Chaos. So when you think about open source project health, what is that and how do we measure it?
So that topic, what is the health of your OSS projects, find out with Chaos Metrics and Software, was to highlight the two tools that we had at the Chaos Community Organ and Grimoire Labs. It was for the Open Infra Summit in Vancouver. Georg was the one who was able to attend physically, and he spoke about Grimoire Labs and the Augur project. And then Ian Sean submitted a written article on it, on speaking about Augur and some of the metrics that we measure. So Augur is a software suite for collecting and measuring structured data about free and open source software communities. Basically, it uses some of the metrics that have been created by the Chaos community to measure how healthy, using data to measure how healthy an open source community is, right? Open source project health is just literally how healthy your community is, right? What's the contribution like? What is the community like? Do people feel welcome? Do people feel like they belong? Are your community members valued? What are contributions like? Is there a clear metric for growth in the community, right? And so there are like a whole bunch of metrics that are also like put into consideration, and that's like literally what is used to measure this healthiness. But one of the core ways to tell like how healthy an open source project is mostly from the members, right? How do they interact? How do they feel when they join the community? Are their contributions valued? Do they think that they can grow here? Most people join open source communities out of voluntary places, right? But can they, like, when they check the before and after of joining their projects, can they say, this has impacted my life in so and so way, and I have been able to grow while being here. And it's so awesome because as much as chaos provides these metrics, they also like practice them. So you can see firsthand by being in the community how these metrics are applied. And it's just really, really cool to know that these are things that are valued in an open source ecosystem or in an open source project, right? So one of the core ways for me to identify that a community, an open source community is healthy, is by the ways contributors feel in the project and how they are valued while making contributions.
You told me about All in Africa, and it's a super interesting and a very important project, but many people might not know about it. They might have heard about it, but they're not sure what exactly it is. You seem to know quite a bit about it, so please tell us more. What is All in Africa?
Right, the All in Africa program, that is an open source education project by GitHub for the African continent. It's part of its DEI measures to like spread open source education in different parts of the world. For the African continent, it's more to reach underrepresented areas, underrepresented and under-resourced areas. And it's so cool because we did the first call. I worked as a technical content designer for the project. And it's been so amazing because we had like participants from various parts of Africa join in and are seeing people who had prior like all this is no knowledge of open source stuff from the beginning, learn about tools in open source and make their first type contributions. It's such an awesome thing. And so it's just really cool because we get to give people access to this education program that teaches them about the open source ecosystem for a few months, and there's like such tremendous growth within that period. So shout out to GitHub and Ruth Ikega, she's the program manager, and then every other person on the team that has done everything possible to improve open source education across different parts of the world, and specifically in Africa for the Open Africa project. So yeah, it's an open source education program and it reaches all the 5 regions of Africa. And we run different cohorts. We've done the first pilot, we should have another cohort running this year. So you should look out for it. It's really, really awesome, and I'm so proud of the work that is being done.
For the longest time, when people hear you should contribute to open source, it can do so many things for you. It's an amazing experience and it's important. A lot of people might have been like, well, I don't know how to code. And I'm not sure that I'm even interested in learning how to code. So does that mean I can't contribute to open source? And the answer is no, you can definitely contribute to open source. There's so many needs. I just listened to a interview today again on GitHub's Open Source Friday, where the person was talking about the fact that a lot of open source projects can do with legal experts, like people who know the legal landscape. Because not just with licensing, there's a lot of other aspects that it is good to know somebody who knows the legal landscape. And sometimes it's knowing the legal implications of things in countries where you do not live. That is something that a lot of people might not have ever have thought would be a way to contribute to open source, but it is. And you wrote a post on Hashnode titled No Code Contributions in Open Source, referring to the fact that there are many ways to contribute to open source that does not involve code. I would love for you to expand on that and share some of the many ways that people contribute to open source that is not code.
Right, the no-code contributions in open source article. I wrote that after I'd had like a want of questions, right? You, like you mentioned, there are people who say, oh, I want to contribute to open source. I really like the ecosystem, but I don't know how to code, or I don't want to learn how to code, but I really want to do so much work in the system. And then you're like, you don't have to just do code. There's been this whole, typically, actually, the more PR for open source contributions falls more on people who write code. But like more and more, we're having more awareness being raised to let people know that, oh, technical writers can't contribute to open source. You can contribute as a community manager. You can contribute as a project manager or a product manager. You can contribute as a researcher. You can contribute as a designer, right? So, contributions in open source has like a vast range. Any single thing you can do for closed source software, like in no matter any tech stack that exists, normally you can obviously bring it into the open source world and use it there. And the most interesting is sometimes if you find a project that you're interested in, but it doesn't seem like your skill set is something that is there, you can figure out who the maintainers are and reach out to them and let them know, oh, this is what I can do. And this is what I think I can be able to bring to your community, right? But I think something that you shouldn't get into the trap of doing is wanting to contribute to your community and feel like you fix our part, in quotes, when you haven't done work of getting to know the community, finding out what their guidelines are, and making sure that whatever it is you want to bring in or say that you will be able to bring in to contribute to the community is something that they would actually need. So you just don't come in as an obnoxious person or actually come in with like really good intentions, but you don't communicate them properly. And so, because truthfully your skill set is not currently needed, or because you didn't like do your due diligence to figure out how you can bring your skill sets to help out the community, you would have to like be told that, oh, either maybe you find a way to adjust to what we currently need, or you might be torn down entirely. We really know how things, but it's just more that we don't see how this can come in at the time, right? So I think as much as you want to contribute to open source and do really good work, it's really important that you have studied the community you want to contribute to make sure that whatever contributions you want to make in whatever skill set is something that would actually be useful to them, right? So no-code contributions in open source are very much welcome. I think you should explore them. I think you should find communities that you could contribute your amazing skill sets to. But it's also important that as you are getting to know your community, looking for ways to contribute, make sure that you are bringing something that will be needed, and that you've done due diligence to study the community too. So that way, the mutual understanding and like benefits on both parts.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the recording, you are part of the Chaos community. That is how we got in touch. How did you find the Chaos community, and what role has it played in your career thus far? And then in general, what has the impact of community been in your career?
So Chaos. Chaos stands for Community Health Analytics and Open Source Software. And I found Chaos through Altitude. So Altitude has three different phases, yeah? We have the initial application phase, contribution phase, and then the main internship phase. So the initial application phase, it's where you send in your application and you get past that phase. And you get into the contribution phase where you get to contribute to a bunch of open source projects that have partnered with Altitude. And then, like, after the contribution phase, you get selected as an intern, right? So I found Chaos during the contribution phase as one of the communities. And these communities list out the experience levels or the skill sets that they're looking for. And then you can contribute to them. But you look for the ones that align with what you want, and then you contribute to them. And I contributed to the documentation for our work because I was always listed. So far, Chaos has been like my proper introduction to DEI. It was really cool to me to join the community and see how much thought was given into people's realities, right? How do you create a program for folks who might have temporary disabilities or probably acute, like long-term disabilities, or people who probably are nursing mothers or are probably sick, or like it's just really a lot. And I hadn't really, aside from like being a normal considerate person, I hadn't really thought about the amount of work that goes into making sure that you create inclusive spaces. And it was humbling to be a part of that community and like very cool to also see them embody it, right? And so like Chaos was my first introduction to DEI, the thought process behind it, like proper education to creating metrics and how these things affect different people, right? How the tiniest contribution can leave positive effects in lives of the beneficiaries. And so also being a part of the community has given me access to various people that are part of my current professional life. It has let me know about a lot of possibilities. I've had access to special opportunities that I didn't know even existed. I am able to speak on certain topics because of the knowledge that I've gotten from Chaos and how much I've grown. And I was really grateful to the community really because it set me on a path that I am currently in. And I am able to like make a difference in my own world and in the various communities or projects I find myself in because of the amount of impact that the community had in me. And that's something I'm super grateful for. And yeah, I'm actually really glad I found Chaos. It's so cool to learn about different people's lives and how you can create policies or create metrics that can affect them positively and make their lives a little easier. So, yes, agree that I found Chaos throughout the year. I'm grateful for the amount of impact that it's had in my life, both professionally and like knowledge-wise.
Much like in 2023, in 2024, we can hardly have a conversation these days without discussing artificial intelligence. And I think it's especially pressing for people early in their careers in tech, but probably in other industries as well. But I know mostly about tech. So I know a lot of junior developers are pretty scared about the whole AI thing because people are talking about it as if there's no need for junior developers anymore, which is nonsense, but you know, it's out there, and so people are going to worry about this. So for you as a technical writer, but also somebody that's just involved in open source and DEI and all of these kinds of things, how do you see this explosion of artificial intelligence and the impact it can have, both positive, but then don't be scared to talk about the negative.
The AI issue. AI is so cool. I think there was a recent one that came up about generating things, and it's like the whole wave. And it's just really amazing how much technology has grown to make people's lives easier. And that's literally why I see AI as, right? So there's this quote I saw recently that I thought was really fun. AI might not take your job, but people who know how to use AI will. And so when people start the question of, will AI take my job? Will it not take my job? I personally think that AI is a helpful tool. That's literally what technology is. It makes your life easier. And so as a technical writer, I think you should be able to put out really good work. I think you should like work on your stuff, make sure that the content you put out is quality and something that helps people's lives. And you should see AI as a tool that makes your work easier. I do not think that AI will take your role. If anything, I think it's, like I said, make your life easier, right? As long as you know how to use it, learn the whole prompts and stuff. And then you mentioned talking about negativity. I don't know if this is like negative, but I think that the core issue with AI right now is how it kind of brings out some past stuff, but because of how much people may not necessarily be able to tell what is authentic or what is like real or not, because like sometimes the thought process is, as long as it's AI, it's correct, and so you just run with it. Sometimes you're not able to filter and tell. It takes a trained eye. Even with code, we've had cases of developers like bringing out code that ChatGPT has generated for them, and you're like, oh my god, this is terrible. So I think one of the core problems of AI would be that if care is not taken, somehow subpar stuff might come out and would have very less vetting for it, because there's very few people who are able to tell what is authentic and what is not, and that's going to be a problem. But it also means that it kind of creates an opportunity for you to get really good at what you do, so that you'll be able to tell the difference between good work and not so good work. So yeah, I don't think AI will take a job as a technical writer. I think if anything, you should leverage it so that makes your life easier. And you should also try your best to make sure that even though it comes out from AI, you should check the work that comes out of it to make sure that it is correct and that you keep doing good work, right? And I think one of the most powerful things you have as a technical writer is telling stories. And so be authentic, be as authentic as possible, and try to relate in a way that it satisfies your user's needs. So yeah, stop worrying so much about whether AI will take a job or not. Work on building stuff that is good, work on building your craft, work on bringing out authentic stuff, and making use of AI to make your life easier. So you don't have to crack your head so much about generating an outline or bringing out proper topics. Yeah, so yeah, leverage it as much as possible. That's what technology is. Technology is there to make your life easier. So yeah, make use of it, really. Stop worrying so much.
Thank you so much, Precious, for joining for this different kind of episode of the Mycelium Network podcast. We're trying something different here. We're trying an async recording, which in today's world seems like it makes complete sense. We work asynchronously. Why can't we make a podcast asynchronously? So thanks again for joining me and for sharing your knowledge and your insights. In closing, how can people find you and support your work?
Oh, it's okay, Scott. Thank you so much for agreeing to do an async recording. I am so sorry that we couldn't do this live, but it's been such an interesting experience for me. If people want to support my work, I think they can just follow me on social media or Twitter. It's PRESHH0. And you can find me on LinkedIn, like Precious and Routine, my full name. And I have a podcast that I am building. It's to educate people on open source and like various topics and just like talk about random stuff in the open source ecosystem. So yeah, you can find it on Spotify. It's the Open Source Education Podcast. Also, if you want to learn more about me, the people at Story Changes Culture recently put out a feature on their newsletter. You can check that on their website or also subscribe to their newsletter so you can have access to it. So yeah, thank you so much. And I look forward to doing more of this with you sometime in the future. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Mycelium Network podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friends. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. have something to add, continue the conversation on GitHub and join the community on Slack. Until the next one, keep making the web awesome.